Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Okay, here we go. Everything okay in the booth? All right. Thumbs up. That's what I'd like to see. We're all set here. Write it down in the books. Episode 142. And get my notes ready. And I guess we're going to start it, right? Three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your binge and podcasting pleasure. Thank you for scrolling or clicking or downloading, whatever it is you do, swiping, whatever it is you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is appreciated, and as I said, you have 168 hours in a week. All I'm asking for is one. I think it's worth it. It's not a bad price. It's free! It's free! There's just no price. It's just an hour. You have a stray hour where you don't do anything, right? We could use a little diversion in your schedule of just to lay back and hopefully find out some information and laugh and maybe even think, as Bill Cosby. I know it's not fashionable to quote Bill Cosby anymore, but I will be one of the few who does anyway. And I am in no way condoning his behavior, but I thought one of the great lines he used to have on Fat Albert was, at the beginning, he would say, "And if you're not too careful, you might just learn something." Jell-O pudding. But, so if you're not too careful, you just might learn something. I give you credit for that, Bill. So on episode, as I said, don't forget, landing page. You can go to WGNplus.com and you can find all previous 141 episodes of this podcast, which means this is episode number 142. And I thought today that it's been a while since we spoke with Emily Arminetti, who is our regular pop culture club contributor. And I wanted to talk about something specific about the streaming services, because it just dawned on me that I believe it is my 1 year anniversary of being on the stream in terms of having Netflix. It was around this time. And there's an interesting phenomenon happening in the Netflix and streaming world that I think is worth talking about, especially if you watch your Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or any of the other popular streaming services. There's a phenomenon happening which is gaining some steam, and we'll see how much it continues. And it's a whole idea of, now that we are able to binge and we are able to watch full seasons of shows, either canceled shows or shows that have been on in the past that had a cult following, are getting up on Netflix, and suddenly bigger groups of people are discovering these shows, to the extent that they are being given a new life. And some shows are actually being brought back. We've seen that happen with Arrested Development on Netflix several years ago, but now even more recently canceled shows are getting a second life, thanks to the exposure that Netflix has offered. And it's an amazing phenomenon how Netflix has gone from what started as a DVD service. If you remember that, they would send you DVDs in the mail, to now the cutting edge of entertainment technology, streaming, and they are creating their own original programs. It's really quite a success story. So I thought we would talk about that today with Emily. So instead of waiting, let's get right to it. And now we take a stroll to the Pop Culture Club section of the podcast, and we say hi to Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, hey. So, what I wanted to talk about today, first of all, I'm very excited because I have to check the official records that I may have, but I believe we are, I am, if not already, I am approaching my 1 year anniversary of Netflix.
Oh, are you really?
Yes.
Okay, that's really making me feel like time flies by.
Yeah. I think I have to look to see when I officially sign on, but I'm almost positive because a friend of mine around Christmas time and after in January, I remember after Christmas, he had received one of those Amazon Fire Sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And showed me how it, you know, it had Netflix and it had all the other different apps and all that stuff. And it was only, you know, $30 because I was going to have to, you know, I didn't have a smart set.
Right.
My set,
I remember that.
Yeah, my set is older. And so I was like, geez, I hate to go and buy a whole new TV, but I'm feeling kind of out of step here. And he said, you buy one of these Fire Sticks. And so that was my solution. And I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay.
That it was around now because as soon as I saw what this Fire Stick did, I mean, you know, that's one thing. I may be apprehensive about some technology, but when it works and it fulfills a need, I jump on it. I don't hesitate.
Yeah.
So I bought one of those, and so I believe I am in year one.
Well, it sounds like you've had no regrets.
No, not at all. No. In fact, I guess my only regret, I think what needs to be done now, someone needs to be, and I don't know, maybe there is some place that I'm not aware of. Maybe you can help me out on this. Especially Netflix. I mean, my God. I mean, there's so much on Netflix. Is there a place that I can go that lets me know where, at, like, when things are coming on? Is there, like, a TV guide for Netflix?
Well, yeah. There's a couple of sites online that they'll regularly publish. I think, like, Vulture comes to mind. I don't know if you've ever been to that site, but
yeah,
it's kind of just, like, a jump pop culture.
Yeah.
They do a lot of TV recaps and stuff. I'm pretty sure that, like, monthly, they publish, like, an overview of what's new on Netflix, what's leaving Netflix. Like if it's, that's what's leaving is usually for like films.
Right. Yeah.
Although something was expiring, I think, with their Friends contract, I want to say, and that was about to leave. And then people got really upset about it. So then I think they paid like a ridiculous amount of money to like renew the license or something. But so yes, there are some places online. Vulture is the one that immediately comes to mind, but you can find, if you just Google like what's new on Netflix, You'll get kind of a note. You'll be able to find something that can be a guide for you.
Because that is...
It can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Although I do like how Netflix has somewhat of their own built-in algorithm where they, you know, they'll suggest things to you based on stuff you've watched before. And
yeah,
sometimes that's helpful. You know, sometimes...
Yeah, I mean, it's helpful, like, but there's sometimes where there's shows that just don't maybe fall into those categories. I mean, sometimes they'll put... I mean, and to the same extent... That, you know, that same kind of prompt also puts stuff in that I never would like, even though it's based on, they think, based on what I have watched, I would like this. I'm like, no, I would not like that at all. So, but so there is, so Vulture is the place I should go.
Yeah, vulture.com.
Okay.
It's just a website.
You know, I think I see that, like, you know, if you go on... you know, like just the news feed from on Yahoo or things like that, where they have all the different stories. There's always these things like what's leaving Netflix or what's.
Yeah.
And I always am hesitant to click on that because I'm afraid it's one of those scam things where then they make you watch a slideshow for 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. No, and, I don't like that. That's not how Vulture.
Oh, okay. So I never.
Yeah.
I'll have to keep an eye on it for Vulture because I see that. Because I always get sucked into that. It's like, no, I'm not sitting there with the next button.
I know. I hate slideshows.
Yeah. So I've always hesitated. But so the Vulture thing is legit, and I can find that. Okay.
Yes.
Because that's the only frustrating thing that, in fact, I try to think about 6 months ago when I got onto it, because like I said, I was so overwhelmed. I literally went through, I don't know where I found this list, but I went through like, or maybe I just went through the online guide, but I wrote down like almost 3 pages worth of shows that I should watch. And I don't think I watched any of them, but at least I put the effort in. But yeah, but now, my gosh, every 10 seconds, there's something else. And that's the one thing that is so disappointing. It's not disappointing, but it's difficult to navigate because, you know, back in the good old days, in my day, you know.
Right.
You know, September was the beginning of the new season.
Right.
And now these shows, especially on, you know, Netflix or Amazon, they just drop at any time.
Right. There's no season anymore.
No, there's no season. There's no rhyme or reason. I mean, you know, we've been watching that Frankie and Grace, you know, the Jane mm-hmm. Fonda thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then, I know that show. Yeah. Now, and we binged that. We were all up to date on that.
Yeah. That's a Netflix original.
Yeah. Right? And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden, by accident, I saw, January 18th, the new season dropped.
Wait, you know something funny? So, well, my husband got the flu over the holidays, and he was binge watching because he was stuck in bed. And somebody said, like, oh, The Marvelous Miss Maisel is, like, really right. good. You know, that show with Rachel Brosnahan. They just all just won a bunch of awards.
Oh, my God. SAG. Did you see the SAG Awards? The first half hour was all Mrs. Maisels.
Right, right. Now, I haven't watched it yet, but this is kind of funny. So this is on Amazon Prime, I think.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the way that they have it set up, if you go to Amazon Prime, the new season, so there are 2 seasons now on there.
Right.
The second season is like the default tab when you go to that page. So he watched the entire second season
without knowing,
realizing that he came in midstream because he just clicked on the first episode. Nah, but unfortunately, the way they had that landing page set up, that it was busy. But he said, he's like, maybe this is a testament to how good the show is. I watched the whole second season, like, without realizing it was the second season, and I still really liked it.
So he did like it?
So then, and then he had to backtrack and watch the first season.
So he does, because I haven't watched it yet either. Yeah, I've been hesitant to watch it.
Yeah.
Just because, as I've said many times, when something is that popular that fast, I always tend to say, okay, wait a minute. It can't be. But my gosh, you know, the SAG Awards, which was on a couple of weeks ago, the first 3 awards. Tony Shalhoub, Rachel Shalhoub. And then and who else? There were three.
Rachel Brosnahan won. Shalhoub won, and then I think they won for best ensemble cast for a comedy.
Yeah, I think the first 3 awards.
Yeah,
and once again, as we talked about before last week when we were talking about you can almost predict the Academy Awards without ever seeing any of them. Mm-hmm. I picked as we're watching this, my wife and I were watching it. I said, Miss Maisels, and boom, I hadn't seen most of the shows or movies that were on, I was very shocked that they picked the Black Panther.
Yeah, I know you were leaning toward, I know that you've been thinking Green Book. And who did you think the other front runner was? Roma, those.
Well, yeah, just because of the hype. But now the Black Panther won the SAG thing. That changes mm-hmm. the Oscar thing.
It'll be interesting to see. So, yeah, but you've got to be careful with the streaming services because new seasons just pop up.
That's what I'm saying.
You might not know.
And that's my point is I don't even know how. So I'm glad you told me about this because, if I hadn't just, accidentally come across this thing. You know, you don't even know it. It's like, a whole new season is there. Like, I've never watched that. Do you ever watch that Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yes, and I love it.
Oh, you do?
I think yes. But I was a huge 30 Rock fan.
Oh, so was I.
Well, then this was created by Tina Fey.
But I once again, now that I was just paging through, I get the New Yorker magazine, and on the back cover, I mean, once again, if I hadn't flipped the magazine over to put it down, I saw it's like, oh, final season. I'm like, whoa, didn't even know.
Yes. Okay. So is that on there? Because actually, I need to now.
Yeah.
I need to. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the their final season, they did a weird thing where they kind of split it into two. So they had like eight episodes. I don't know. Whenever so they had like the first eight episodes of the final season, and then we had to wait all this time. Which why? I guess maybe because they had to film it.
Well, not only that, but I think they've done the same thing with Game of Thrones. I mean, like whenever Game of Thrones, I believe it starts in April, but you know, there's only six episodes. Now each one's going to be over maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours. But my point is, I think whenever a show like that or very popular shows, once they say it's over, then they say, how do we, make this a nice long goodbye?
Yeah.
And so instead of binging the whole thing, now they got an extra year out of you.
How do we maximize the number of awards that we win over time?
Well, it's not even awards.
We'll
just
stretch it across two calendar years.
You know, and don't forget, I mean, you know, what Netflix and all the other streaming services want you to do is they don't necessarily, like, you know, I think we talked about this with House of Cards. They don't really, at this point, their goal is to get you on that site. Get you on there, like your husband was talking, like you were saying, where he just got on there and just started, you know, scanning around and saw this and said, oh, I've heard about this and started watching it. They don't really care about, you know, was this overly good or not. They just want you to get on that thing, you know, to get on Netflix, to get, you know, to find, get on that landing page, and then hopefully they will bombard you, you know, with enough content that you'll say, okay, fine. So, you know, the idea is, okay, look, we've got Kimmy Schmidt here. If we give all the, you know, 16 episodes, then once that if you're a Kimmy Schmidt fan and that's about it, then you maybe don't come back for 6 months.
Right.
You know, so this way.
But, you know, I think once you've subscribed, they've got you. You know, it's not like you're going to.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about that. But still, at the same time, you know, it's still. It's still, I think as, you know, as time goes on, I mean, I don't know. At this point, it's not a behavioral thing. I think most people at this point, just because of the sheer content that they're putting up there, you know, mm-hmm. Netflix or any kind of streaming service that someone might have, since you are paying for it as well, is kind of a first place you go. But I do know that I still have my set. Now, have you cut the cord?
No, but I can't because of Bravo. So don't tell my husband that. I have him convinced that we can't cut the cord because think of all the sporting events we get to watch. But really, it's because of Bravo.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah.
So
have you cut the cord?
No, I haven't. No, I love my cord. I love my cord. Yeah. I love my cord because there are a few shows. I mean, the funny thing is that I was just saying this to my wife yesterday because there is a station that I first discovered in our kitchen. We have just a small TV, just, you know, as background noise, you know. Uh-huh. And it's not even hooked up to our satellite. You know what I mean? I actually have one of those little antennas. Because just to get up, you know, over the air, just for the major stations. And but there are on that antenna several other stations. There's actually a pretty extensive mix of channels on there.
Okay.
Over the air, and so I was just going through. This was a couple of years ago. There was this one called Buzzer, and I'm like, what the hell is Buzzer? And it turned out that it's a station that basically just shows old game shows.
Oh, wow.
You know, like Match Game and Password and Password Plus and Supermarket Sweep and Card Sharks and old What's My Lines from 1960, you know. And so for a while, when we would be in the kitchen, either, you know, eating dinner, if my wife was, you know, baking or whatever, doing whatever in the kitchen, you throw it on, and it was just nice background noise. Well, then all of a sudden, I noticed that this same station popped up on my satellite offering.
Oh, okay.
And so now, we watch Buzzer all the time. I never watched Supermarket Sweep in my life. Do you even know what it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't watch it.
I watch it every night now, 7:30.
Oh, my gosh.
And 8 o'clock, hour of Supermarket Sweep. And then at like 3 in the morning, from like 3 to 5, they have Match Game. They show old Match Games.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sitting there going, where would we be without Buzzer? Because sadly, I'll tell you, I think I may have told you this even about a year or so ago, and here we are again. The shows that I DVR off of my satellite are at like 9.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing. I used to have 20.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, it's really sad. And like I said, what I like about Netflix is obviously there's so much stuff from the past as well as the present. But my God, it's just, there's so much there.
You're overwhelmed.
I am overwhelmed. But so part of what I wanted to talk about today was in the streaming world, we're finding a new little trend here. So I wanted to get your take on it, and I would certainly share mine, which is the whole point of this podcast. But so over the last several, especially over the last, I guess, several months. Now, I think has been going on for a while. Netflix initially was smart when they were trying to provide content, is that they were going out and finding older shows that may have had a cult following, but were perhaps hastily canceled from network television because, you know, 2 or 3 million people on a network show is a bust. Yeah. But I was just saying, if 2 or 3 million people if reviving a show that 2 or 3 million people liked, for Netflix, that's a goldmine.
Sure.
That's 2 or 3 million more people that will buy their services. So they were smart enough to go back and revive shows like Arrested Development, which was on Fox and was canceled after a couple of seasons. And there's always been this call for, oh, wouldn't it be great if it came back? And then they finally did it. Now, it didn't really live up to its expectation, but it's there if you want it. But now an interesting thing is happening.
Well, and to your point, I'm sure that Arrested Development fans watched it.
Oh, definitely.
Whether they liked it or not.
When I got Netflix, the first thing I did was watch the Arrested Development, you know, reboot. Whether, and that was a year after or so, but still, that was the first thing I watched. So, but now an interesting dynamic is occurring, which. Once again, shows the amazing power of Netflix. To their credit, I don't know where they're getting all this money to buy or make all these shows unless they are just grabbing subscribers at an amazing rate. It's just amazing. I think
right now they've got like almost 140 million.
Do they really have that many?
That's what I read, but wow. I don't know.
I mean, the stuff that's happening now.
They disclose their number of subscriptions, which you know, that's the main thing they're concerned with. You never really know what the ratings are for individual shows that they have, but I mean, they don't disclose that, but. I don't think they even care about. I mean,
no, they don't.
I don't know how much they care about.
No, they don't. They don't care about. As I said, their goal is to get you on the site, whatever draws you there. And like I said, even though I thought the last season, the finale season of House of Cards, was okay, it wasn't great. You know, and they had all that hubbubaloo with Kevin Spacey, had to rewrite the final season and everything. But you know what? They didn't care because they just want, you know, if you're a House of Cards fan, you had to watch that final season.
Oh God, yeah.
Because you need closure
on this stuff,
right?
You know?
So once again, they get you there. But an interesting dynamic has happened over the last couple of months, especially, you know, as they start to continue to add more recent shows to their lineup that may be on or may have been canceled. Once again, just to provide content. What's happening is that many of these shows have either been canceled or no one was watching them. But now, because they were either on obscure kind of channels, like there's a show with Eugene Levy called Schitt's Creek, which is on the Pop channel. I don't even know how many people get Pop. Or there are some network shows like Kiefer Sutherland's Designated Survivor, which started, when it first premiered on ABC, was one of the biggest shows ABC had. And then it kind of trailed off. And so, but then that went on there. So, but now when these seasons, it just goes to show you how our behaviors have changed. You know, people just like immediate gratification.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, I don't want to wait 26 weeks.
No, you don't.
And so now when...
not only that, no, people, forget about 26 weeks. People don't even want to wait 1 week anymore. Like, remember when you were watching a show and it was on the air, it'd be on like every Sunday night. And then, especially with the shows that have big cliffhanger type, you know, like Breaking Bad or The Americans, or, you know, every episode something happens where you're like, oh, like you just can't wait to see the next one. Nobody wants to wait. You don't even want to wait a week for that anymore. You just want to have like, okay, that happened.
Right.
And like, they don't even want to wait the 15 seconds for Netflix to automatically load it. They just hit like, you know,
skip intro.
Opening credits.
Skip intro.
Right. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I said, so it's amazing. And so now that many of these shows that, as I said, either never found traction or are kind of languishing on, you know, kind of obscure channels, or, you know, have been canceled or whatever on major networks, or just were on another, you know, cable network and came and went because no one even knew about them or whatever. When they are there in a binge format where here's season one, here's season two, go at it. These shows are getting a second life. And so suddenly, like I said, some of the shows that I just mentioned to you, Designated Survivor has now been picked up by Netflix.
Yep.
And there's also a show that I think that was on Fox, was called Lucifer. And that was, I assume it's about the devil. And that one got picked up. And I was reading this story in Entertainment Weekly talking about some of the other ones. Like, for instance, now the show Shameless has been on Showtime for many years.
Mm-hmm.
But now suddenly it's now all the episodes are up, you know, for streaming on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And now, even though the show is about to end, all of a sudden people have discovered Shameless, which has been around for at least 7 or 8 years.
Right.
And I guess now there's one show that sort of brought light to this, is a show that was on Lifetime, which, you know, unless it's Christmas time, who even watches Lifetime?
Right.
And it's a show called You, all capitalized for some reason, Y-O-U.
Yep.
And this show, I guess, came and went, but now it is up on Netflix, and it's a bona fide hit.
Yes. Well, yeah, it got canceled and they kind of saved it.
Now, what is...
Maybe it hadn't officially been canceled.
40 million subscriber views in its first month on Netflix.
Yeah.
40 million.
Yeah,
so
that's amazing.
Yeah,
I'm actually shocked by that.
So, okay, so good. So now, so here...
Because so I've seen that show.
Because here's my point. And so I'm glad. I want to ask you about this show. But my point in the bigger scheme of it is, so, because I used to watch Schitt's Creek. I like Eugene Levy, and Catherine O'Hara is on it as well, Second City People, mm-hmm. and Chris Elliott. And so when it started, I started watching, and I watched it for the first couple of seasons and enjoyed it. And then into the third season, I just felt like it was kind of just going a little off the rails. It was getting a little, you know, it just was kind of losing sight. It seemed like they lost sight of where they wanted to go. But regardless, but so now it went up on Netflix, And so I have been watching. Mm-hmm. I have not been watching it the last couple of seasons, but it starts its fifth season now, and suddenly it got on Netflix, and people started binging it, and now there's these people that are, you know, it's helped them get a fifth season.
Right.
So, but here's my point. You know, even like Designated Survivors, I said when it first started, it was a really cool concept that, you know, the they have a custom when the president gives a State of the Union address that one representative does not go to the chamber. The Designated Survivor is what they're right. called, because in case somebody decides to do something catastrophic while the entire United States government is at that State of the Union, Both the president and both houses of Congress, and many times even the Supreme Court, there will be somebody around to run the government.
Sure.
And that's what happens. The Capitol gets blown up. So it's really kind of an interesting concept and was kind of cool for a while. But then after the second or third season, at least from my standpoint, I guess from everybody else's standpoint, it sort of lost track again because it became Jack Bauer run, you know, as president.
Yeah. Well, but, like you said, it's a great premise.
Right, but point is, so these shows
so much
lose.
You can do.
Yeah, but my point is, these shows, you know, if you watch the first couple seasons, you in a binge situation, you go, "Wow, how did I miss this show?"
Yeah.
But then the reason why it got canceled was it didn't maintain that quality, and got canceled. But if you just binge the first two seasons, you think this is a great show. So then they continue to make new episodes when the show has been bad. See, you. Right. So my point is, you've been watching the best of it, but now it gets a second life. But that second life is probably not going to be worth it because it was already losing its quality and its momentum.
Right.
So that's the way I felt with Schitt's Creek, and that's the way I felt with Designated Survivor. So while I think this is great that people are discovering these shows, I also wonder, are these shows worth saving? Maybe they deserve to be canceled.
Oh, sure. I mean, at some point, they all need to go, you know, and we here, we're really, really bad about, like, you know, in America, if something is a hit, they will do it until it's just like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You just
bury it until
it's dead. It's dead, you know. And it's not necessarily the same. Like, for example, you know, if you look at the UK, for example, I mean, like The Office is a great example. That was like two episodes in a Christmas special. The original Office. I mean, not two episodes.
Two seasons.
How many seasons of The Office do you think there were here? Oh, I don't know. Six,
well, not
seven,
only that, but a season was only six episodes.
Right.
There's only like 12 or 13 episodes of The Office.
Oh, yeah.
The original.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we kind of do things to death here. So it's not surprising that streaming is kind of getting on board and now enabling that even further. But, you know, I mean, for some shows that are newer, like, I think it probably doesn't work so much with shows that have been on the air, like Designated Survivor for a handful of seasons, and then it's not doing well, so the network doesn't want it anymore, and so Netflix, picks it up. That's probably not. Maybe for the shows that did, like, one season on a network, and it didn't really work, like you mentioned, that show You. This is not a bad strategy for them, you know, for Netflix, because look at what it did. They got 40 million people to watch that show.
I don't think it's a bad strategy at all. I'm just saying that so many times when a show gets canceled, and then even like on a network, for instance, and then there's this, you know, big groundswell of fans and a show then is revived.
Yeah.
Many times it doesn't last more than one season. Because once again, yes, there was this vocal minority that screamed for it, but there was a reason that the masses weren't watching it anymore. I'm gonna find it very interesting to see what happens this season with Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. Well, okay. Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's a show that I really liked when it first came on. I think it's very funny. I kind of stopped watching it.
So did I. Exactly. That's exactly what
point. But not because I didn't like it. It was more just the time around the time that I stopped watching that show was when I moved from Brooklyn to Austin, and I was too busy. I probably wasn't watching anything. You know, I was just had a lot going on. And also, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is the kind of show that you feel like, even if you miss a couple seasons, it's a comedy. So you
can probably plug
right back into it.
Oh, you can.
So, but I did stop watching it because it wasn't good. And then equally, I'm actually kind of happy about this trend because there are shows that have been canceled that I loved, but they just never really got a big enough following. Like, I'll give you an example. There was a show called Odd Mom Out on Bravo. I think it was on Bravo.
Would you stop with Bravo?
I can never stop watching Bravo. Any chance to bring up Bravo. But this show, this was like an original series. It was a comedy. It was about this woman living on the Upper East Side, raising her kids there, but having to navigate all of the politics of being a mother to young kids on the Upper East Side. And I mean, also having lived in New York, I thought it was really funny, and it definitely was very on point. And Jill Kargman, who I think created it and probably was, I'm sure, like, you know, a writer and a producer of the show, she's not really... She starred in it. She's not traditionally, I think that was her first role, but she was hilarious in it. I love the show. And I wish Netflix would, because it's been canceled by Bravo after like the third season, just after the third season aired, it just got canceled. And I was so bummed to hear that. And this is the kind of thing that I wish Netflix would just swoop in and, you know, resurrect that.
So tell me about this You show, because the one that started. It was on Lifetime, which, I mean, Lifetime is like is like a ridiculous thing anyway. The most maudlin and superficial shows. You know,
which is why You actually is not a bad fit for Lifetime, because they do a lot of these weird, like, TV made for TV stuff where, like, you know, it's usually like some guy is trying to kill some girl,
right?
Mother, may I sleep with danger, or just like cheesy show, like cheesy TV movies like that. So, You is actually kind of a good fit for Lifetime. I don't know why it didn't work, because it's basically about this guy who is working at a bookstore in New York. He sees this girl comes in. He kind of helps her, but he's like wants to ask her out. He becomes obsessed with her and he starts following her, but also pursuing her. You know, at the same time, as like he wants to date her. Like, they have legitimately met while he was helping her at the store, and it just takes off from there. Okay. And it's like, I don't even know how to explain it, but there a series of things happen then that are just so crazy and over the top. But it is like a thriller. Okay. It is good. It's actually fairly good binge watching, but I would say I watched it. Okay. It's very popular. Very popular. I was shocked to see this. It's got like a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I told you, 40 million people.
But it's so crazy. I watched it. I binge watched it when I was sick. So I was stuck in bed. Otherwise, I don't think that I would have seen it to date. Now, it's not a bad... I mean, you would expect it to... It's got all the right ingredients for success. Like, you know, it's got, like, some young stars, like, some newer people on the scene, and then, like, some established people, like Penn Badgley, is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
Who used to be on Gossip Girl, and, you know, he's a popular young-ish actor. He's kind of a heartthrob, you know, with girls like him, fine. One of the stars of Pretty Little Liars, an actress called Shay Mitchell, she is also in it, and she's kind of someone, like, so you bring a couple of known, you know, actors into the mix, and then they've got a few newer ones who I'm sure will go on to have some success in Hollywood. And so it's got the right ingredients, but for me, when I watched it, I mean, I wasn't like, after a few episodes, and bear in mind, I am stuck in bed, okay? All I have is an iPad. That is it. That's all I have to entertain me. There, like, I would get like 3 episodes in, I was kind of like, eh. I don't know. Like, should I hit the button for the next episode, or should I just like close my eyes and take a nap? Because after a while, I was kind of like, okay, we get it. You're a stalker. Like, it gets a little bit slow in that sense, but it also gets very over the top. Like you're saying, now this is the first season of this show, and what you're talking about with some of these shows is that after so many seasons, they start to get really over the top with their plot lines and things because they've been on for so long. It's like, okay, what else can we do? You is the kind of show that, like, so many things happen in the first season that you're just like, what? Really? Like, come on. But people love it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority. I am not sure that you would like this show. If
no,
you
I don't
it.
Think like, I would like it at all. No.
I do not think this is your jam. No. But
my
a lot
jam.
Of people, it is not your jam. But a lot of people love it.
Well, I think, too.
And they're doing. And so now Netflix is producing the second season of it.
Well, yeah. And like I said, now the only thing that I think also happens, too, is like I said, if it's popular, I mostly shy away from it. Because in my view, if that many people like it, it can't be good.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, when something is so universally liked, when I take a look at the majority of people, I am not in step with them. So,
right.
If it's that popular,
it's probably not for you.
Yeah, it's not for me. But I think there's also what happens here, because even the people who did this show, who created this show, you, mm-hmm. they can't believe it.
Right.
That 40 million people. I mean, that's approaching like Super Bowl kind of numbers.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, that's ridiculous. There's no way that a show on Lifetime would ever get a 40 million, you know, amount of people. So I think you're also, and that's why you're seeing, like, for instance, the music charts are so skewed right now. I don't think, as soon as they started counting YouTube or views, I think the, you know, the Billboard charts have been, they're useless. They're not.
Yeah.
Because then there is this kind of popularity thing of, oh, well, what's you? Well, let me watch it. Well, you know, you could have watched one episode, and it still counts as in the 40 million.
Right.
Because of curiosity. So, you know, first of all, don't forget the ease it is to just click on a show and count as a view. That also has to be categorized, which it isn't, because if you're trying to hype something, you don't care if the person watched the whole season or one episode. When you put those numbers together, you're going to say, hey, we got 40 million views.
Right.
So I think there's this kind of cascade effect that once this thing becomes popular, then everybody goes, well, what am I missing? So I think you also have to temper that. But it's going to be interesting to see as we move forward here. Like you said, it's an okay show. And yet, because of the format of Netflix, because Netflix has now really become a major staple of our entertainment, you know, services, certainly with young people, and this plays right into the, you know, the teenage and 20 and 30 something crowd with a stalker and all that kind of stuff. So,
oh, yeah, and by the way, a lot of his stalking is enabled by technology and social media.
Yeah, so it plays
also plays right into
It's not a surprise that, you know, once a show like this is exposed to people in that age group, it's not surprising that they at least would check it out like you did. You know, hey, I don't know, I'm home alone, I'm homesick, I heard people talking about this, let me check it out. Should I stay? Should I go with it or not? But it doesn't matter. Yeah,
there's nothing else on.
But you got counted into those 40 million.
Right.
They don't say that those 40 million all liked the show. They just say those 40 million viewed the show. But those are big numbers, and that's enough. In today's world, anything with any kind of traction is suddenly, even if it's for another year, you know, we always go after the shiny object now. So, like I said, I'm just going to be interested to see as time goes on, because now, like you said, this is actually a good strategy for shows that are either dying on the vine or that they feel that nobody is seeing. And so I would not be surprised if we start to see more of this, because from Netflix's standpoint, they're only gaining from it. And then the creators of these shows certainly are gaining by the added exposure.
Well, yeah, and I don't really know. I mean, with Netflix, it's like, as a platform, I assume that there's just an unlimited amount of, you know, space for content, right? Like, I don't think they have any kind of restrictions there.
Right.
So then it really comes down to money, you know, either licensing, you know, shows that have already aired, and then they need to make sure they have those in order to have them on, you know, to offer them on Netflix. Or then, you know, creating the money that they have to use to back original content and create that, and then the money that they need to use to buy the rights to something that already exists on the network and move it over to Netflix. But when you think about it, it's kind of perfect in terms of when you think about how they started. I mean, Netflix started way back in the day, remember, it was like a mail, like they would send you like CDs.
Well, that's the amazing, that's what's so amazing is when you think about, I mean, that was over 15 years ago that service started, and it really was, in terms of technology or cutting edge, it was ridiculous. It was basically Blockbuster through the mail.
Right. Yeah. You never had to get up and go anywhere.
I mean, that was the big thing was that you had your queue, you know, so there was the interaction that you were on the Netflix website and you said, here's the five movies I want to see. And as soon as they're available, send them to me. But you had to send them back. I mean,
and then when you send them back, they'll send you your next few.
But I mean, think about how ancient that sounds. And that was only 15 years ago.
I know. I mean, I know. But then they basically become like one of the pioneers of streaming services, the pioneer, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
so,
without a doubt.
Which is great. But then, even then, remember that Netflix, when it first started as a streaming service, it was essentially a library or a catalog of stuff that had aired and was done. Either like TV shows that had aired and had been off the air for a while, and you could go there and watch old episodes, or movies. It was like just a big library of movies. And then when they introduced original content, obviously that was a huge game changer for them. And whoever at Netflix had that idea, I mean, I hope that that person like...
Ironically, it was House of Cards. Changed the game.
Yes.
House of Cards was a Netflix original with Kevin Spacey, a two-time Oscar winner. It was based on a British show that no one here really saw. Mm-hmm. But it was a huge investment because I'm sure it cost, you know, Spacey himself probably took a big risk because he was an Oscar winner, a two-time movie, you know, two-time Oscar winner, major movie star. And he's going on this fledgling, you know, nobody even knew what streaming was at that point.
Right.
And so, but when that show proved to be very, you know, high quality production and money was put into it and the acting, you know, with Robin Wright and, you know, and many others. That was the first thing. Once again, when I got Netflix, I had to go to a friend's house for the first two or three seasons or four seasons to watch.
Oh, I remember you telling me that. And I was like, I'm surprised your friend didn't buy you the subscription for Christmas just to get you out of his house.
Right, exactly. Because we would go there literally for 12 hours and watch the whole season.
Yeah.
And so, so House of Cards, and then what's so ironic about it is then that, you know, Kevin Spacey winds up being fired by Netflix, and he's the guy that really, I'm not debating, it's just funny how things work out that Kevin Spacey, all things being equal, he should have been the crown jewel of Netflix and should have had a career on Netflix for the next 20 years, continuing doing other shows, because he's the guy that really brought audiences to Netflix and then allowed them, like we were saying earlier, if they've got all these subscribers, I mean, I believe it's going to be on Netflix. they've got Martin Scorsese. They're doing a mob related movie with Scorsese and De Niro and Joe Pesci.
Oh yes, I've heard about that.
The Irishman
retired for a long time.
I mean, it's called The Irishman, but I mean, this is a movie. This is a project.
I didn't realize though that was even streaming, let alone on Netflix. I had no idea. I thought that was just
no. That's my point. Is that this should have been in a normal world. That's a movie. That's a theatrical release. Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci making a mob movie? And yet, look where it's at. And I believe, you know, there's a new sequel or a prequel, I guess, to The Sopranos.
Oh, yes, there is.
That David Chase is writing. Or, I mean, I think he's producing. I don't think he's directing. I think he might be writing it. But and I think that's either on Amazon or Netflix.
Well, actually, that was making news. Like, I think it was last week or the week before, because they cast James Gandolfini's real life son to play Tony as a younger.
But my point is, that's not even going to HBO. I don't think.
Oh, really?
That is going to Netflix or one of the or Amazon, one of the streaming services. I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, my gosh, the landscape has changed where they are investing millions of dollars in high profile projects, certainly with high profile talent. Now, whether these shows are good or bad, and once again, I don't know if this, you know, say this De Niro and Scorsese and Pesci thing, who knows? You know, has this script been making the rounds in Hollywood and nobody wanted to do it because they didn't see, once again, a studio, according to the studio matrix, didn't see it becoming worth their while, because all those three guys alone right there, you know, bring a heavy, price tag. So maybe they say, look, this is going to be a very fringe movie and it's not going to make our money back. But once again, for Netflix, they say, hey, all I know is if there's a thing with De Niro and Scorsese and Pesci, whether it's good or bad, people will come to our site. Once again, their goal is not quality, and their goal is not quality, and it's not profits. It's their goal on a project is to draw you to their site.
Right.
It's traffic.
Well, but you also don't know, because you don't know. You don't know if that's been shopped around, or you don't know if maybe Netflix approached Martin Scorsese or vice versa, because now Netflix is in a position where people in the industry basically have to consider them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
More like a traditional
studio. Oh, I think
a traditional television network.
Oh, I think someone like Martin Scorsese actually probably sought out Netflix because once again, not only the economics of it, but the other side is, you know damn well that from Scorsese's standpoint, he says, well, wait a minute. You know, Netflix is the place to go, probably for creative freedom. They're not worried about ratings. They're not worried about, the PG or R. He can have probably full artistic freedom. It's the hip place to be. No one's going to bother him. And it doesn't matter whether it makes money or not.
Right.
Because
it doesn't matter if it makes money, and it could start winning, you know, Oscars. I mean, if Roma wins any Oscars, they're nominated for 10. They win any. Am I wrong in thinking that that will be the first time that, like, a Netflix production wins an Oscar?
It has to be.
I don't think I think that is.
Yeah.
And so now you've got that in the mix as well, you know.
Well, I think you're also going to see the fact when there's, like you're saying, which is a really good point, you know, Roma has been on Netflix from the beginning. So.
Right. And this is the thing. And like so many other, I mean, some of the show, they've won Emmys, they've won Golden Globes, they've won. So Netflix is they're really starting to get traction in that sort of prestige.
But I think once again, the bigger picture of this is when you start to see movies and then you're starting to see more, the Coen brothers had the same thing where there was this, it was a Western that they just put out. But you're seeing that movies are being now either simultaneously or at the very least not much delayed. They may be premiering on Netflix, but they're also going to the theaters, and we're getting very close to that point now where, once again, if I want to watch Roma, I could just go on Netflix now. I don't have right. to go and try to find it at, you know, some obscure movie theater because it's a small kind of film that's not going to mm-hmm. be in a lot of screens. So how close now, I think, in the next 5 years, I would not be surprised, how close are we where first-run films, and you may pay a premium, but we're getting really close to the point where first-run films are not strictly at movie theaters. But they,
right, which is fine. Even if you pay a price, so what? They're never going to charge you as much as you're going to pay for a ticket to the cinema.
Right, but it's just, you know? But it's just the point of the, you know, today, like you said, hey, you're sitting in your bed, you're sick, you've got your iPad. I mean, we've talked about this over the last, you know, several years with the podcast. How I've talked about, look, we have become a society of convenience, and there certainly are, you know, aspects and creative as well as communal aspects as to why you want to see a movie in a theater, the big screen, the sound effects, you know, IMAX, you know, whatever you want to call it.
But it takes a certain type of movie.
Exactly. And that's moving toward just
someone like me go to the cinema just to see.
Oh, exactly.
Because I would rather watch it at home.
Well, that's, well, of course. Like I said, I stopped going to the theater many years ago because I can't take the people's behavior, the talking.
I know.
And all that stuff. And so I probably miss some, you know, I've missed some films in the immediacy. Well, I pick them up on the back, but I don't see them mostly at, you know, at theaters. Now I will be seeing, I know I will be going in May to the movie theater.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
To see a certain film called Rocket Man.
Of course.
But that's about the only time that I will be going. But yeah, so I think, you know, it's been a long time. There's been always, you know, in the pay-per-view world, when that started, there was always talk about, you know, would movies have simultaneous releases, you know, at a theater as well as at home via whatever kind of format it was.
Well, yeah, and on demand, my cable, I don't even remember what cable I have, but on my on demand, they have a section in movies for in theaters now, but it's never anything you really want to see.
Well, that's
it's
my point.
Really obscure stuff that I'm like, oh. Yeah.
Right. That's my point. So, but I do think that because now Netflix and streaming services are becoming so ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Everyone has them. It's not even viewed as something odd or strange, that I would think that ultimately the theaters, the studios are going to sit down with Netflix or these streaming services, or maybe there'll be a completely new streaming service created. Who knows?
Oh, well, I'm sure there's going to be more competition.
But I just think there will be one. I think I wouldn't be surprised because it's really become, a part of the landscape. It's not even viewed as something strange or niche anymore. That there will be. And once again, you might pay a little extra, which people may be willing to do to see a first run film. But I would not be surprised within the next 5 years, as you see, when a film debuts at the theater on Friday, you can also watch it in your home, and it won't just be one movie. It will be on a regular basis. And like I said, maybe you will pay whatever, but you make that decision. Am I willing to wait, as you said, you know, 3 or 4 months for my movie to come, this first run movie, or will I pay a little premium? Yeah. And I think we've seen that, that today's world, we are paying premiums for the convenience.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so I would not be surprised. I mean, look at what's going to happen. Disney, you know, once again, they you know, Disney has an amazing, advantage of having this pristine and this huge and in-demand library. So they're starting their own service.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So they're going to be off of Netflix, and they are going to have their own service. And so you won't be able to see Lion King or these other things. It's all going to be and whatever is new. And so Disney said, you know, once again, they have the ability to sit back and wait to see until something is proven, as opposed to taking a risk, because they, you know, the key is content, and Disney has the content.
They do, but it'll be, and I at this point, I'm not sure if anyone can really stop Netflix. I mean,
Netflix. I'm not saying they're going to stop it, but my point is that Disney said, look, why should we be sending people to Netflix?
Yeah.
Let's create our own.
Bring them here. Yeah.
We've got this library of stuff that goes back 70 or 80 years.
Right.
And it's some of the most classic and beloved entertainment that's ever been made. So why should we give it to them and get pennies on it when we can get the whole shebang?
Right.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, it's really been interesting, like you said, which is really an amazing point when you think about that. Netflix started as just a once again, there's the word, a convenient kind of competition for, at that time, Blockbuster, which still existed. Right. Which now doesn't exist.
Wait, no, yeah, no, yeah, it's gone, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there are any existing.
I don't think there are. And if there are, there's one or two. I mean, you know, where it used to blanket the country.
Right.
And so here was this thing where somebody wisely said, hey, wait a minute, you know, for convenience sake and, and integrating with the internet, with your queues and all that stuff. But it started as still a very kind of hard copy kind of thing, and then wisely saw this streaming thing. And now, you know, it's become the granddaddy. It's really been an amazing story because, I said, I would think Netflix is probably, it's not even 20 years old.
Oh, no.
No.
No, no, no.
Even from those days.
I want to say, well, for God's sakes.
Like 2002? I think
VCR
it was like.
VCR in like 1999. Okay.
You did what?
I still had a VCR in 1999.
Yeah, but I think that Netflix came around about 2001 or 2002.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's not even 20 years. So anyway, well, we will see if, as I said, I don't know how many of these shows that Netflix is saving are worth saving. We'll see, but they don't really care. If I'm Kiefer Sutherland... or if I'm the producer of You, I say thank God for Netflix.
Yeah, for sure.
Because at least I get one or two more years out of in a paycheck that I probably wouldn't have had or don't deserve. But no one cares if I deserve it or not. And once again, I in fact today, what I may do to celebrate is.
Is buy a subscription to Hulu.
No, I only have Amazon and
I know, but this will be my goal for this year. Now that you've celebrated your 1 year anniversary of Netflix.
Is Hulu really, is there that much on Hulu?
Well, The Handmaid's Tale is what got me
to
subscribe, but I'll tell you what, I also just watched Killing Eve, which Sandra Oh is racking up award after award for.
Yeah.
So this is interesting, and this just has to do with, I think, just the nature of this being a BBC show. So Killing Eve aired, it's on the BBC. They produce it there. It takes place mostly based in London. And even though Sandra Oh, she's, you know, obviously she's an American actress, and she plays, I guess, an American on the show. But in any case, it takes place there. It aired here originally on BBC America, but if you go on demand, you can only watch the first two episodes. So, of course, I watched the first two episodes of it, and you're hooked. It is so good.
Is it really?
The best show. Wow. It is the best show I've seen in a long time.
Oh, I see.
You go, Jim. I'm telling you right now. Go to BBC America on demand. Watch the first two episodes. You will be, I believe, I can't guarantee you're gonna make the switch, because you are a tough, you know, like, you're a tough nut to crack, as we all know. It takes you a little while to be convinced, but I think if anything's could convince you to consider adding another streaming service to your mix, it would be this show, because it is very good. And so, of course, I watched the entire first season. In fact, my husband was traveling when I watched the first one, and I said to him, oh, for your trip back, he was only gone for a couple of days, for your trip back, download these two episodes and then we can watch the rest of it together. Right. Oh no. By the time he got home, I had binge watched the whole thing.
Oh, how funny.
It was too good. I couldn't stop watching. So now I know what all the hype is about.
Yeah. Well,
you will too.
We will see. I am streaming and I will, and I do the same thing. I skip intro. I do not. I just go right to the next episode starting in 5 seconds. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And this episode is now ending in 5 seconds. So thank you very much, Emily, and we will talk to you next time. And so ends another episode, episode number 142 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Thank you for swiping or clicking or downloading or whatever it is you do to find us here on a weekly basis. Your loyalty is much appreciated. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast that comes from the end of the web to your screen.